The following program may not be suitable for all ages.
Recorded live from the secret underground lair of Crimson Cowl Comics and Collectibles, this is the Crimson Cowl Comic Club Podcast.
The following issues may contain spoilers.
Just between us, you might want to work on that little roar of yours. I'm Anthony.
I'm Kirby.
I'm Katie.
I'm Eric.
Welcome to issue number 298 of the Crimson Cowl Comic Club Podcast. Every time we record, we talk about comic books. We won't have a club discussion this week, but as a quick reminder, in probably the next episode, we're going to do the April special from DC Comics, the ape-centric one-shot that has come out to celebrate the month of April. And then we're going to do Once Upon a Time at the End of the World, issue number 14 of 15. And we are nearing our 300th episode of this very show. So we have a lot of exciting things happening this month of April. But on this show, we're going to trek along as we jump into the weekly reviews. That's where we go back and forth. We talk about those books that we've been reading. They could be new, they could be old, but whatever they are, we're going to talk about them here. Then we're going to jump over to the news for part one of two of our previews preview, jumping into the brand new previews catalogs of April for products coming out in June 2024 and beyond. So in this episode, we'll cover Marvel and DC Comics April 2024 previews for June and beyond. So that is the setup for this very show. Let's jump into the weekly reviews. Okay, kicking off the weekly reviews, let's jump over to Eric. What you got for us?
All right. I'm basically going to do an analysis of The Punisher. I believe it's volume 14. Could be wrong. It was a limited four-issue run. I know he did the first one where he ended up facing Hyde, or Joe Garrison, family killed, ended up facing Hyde. Issue two, he goes through you have Bushwhacker on the cover. He's a man who has the ability to organically form weapons out of any of his limbs. No, not the WWE Bushwhacker. Thank God. But in this one, Joe Garrison targets a gentleman named The Offer, who's basically, you know, like a puppet master baddie who's able to get involved in a lot of things. He makes you an offer, and you usually don't refuse it. So Joe Garrison goes into his tower to, you know, make it to The Offer, and we find that The Offer has had a lot of augmented humans helping him out. Like, in one case, it's Finesse. Another one is The Eel, who he beats with a fire extinguisher. One to knock him out cold, and a couple more times, you know, just to teach him some manners. Faces Doughboy, who he incapacitates by pulling grenades that he's still wearing because his shield ballistic armor can take it. Then he ends up fighting Bushwhacker and drops a piano on him. Then he ends up getting to The Offer, and when he does, The Offer basically tells him that the explosion that took out his house was not meant for him, but it was meant for his wife, who worked as an accountant and flagged some accounts to an organization that was planning something that, you know, they wanted to keep everything off the books, so they had her taken out. But they knew all this, and they thought they would do it to the wife of the SHIELD gravedigger. So then that leads us to the third issue, where he goes up against Fear Master. There are two officers who are on his tail. And you find out that, you know, he ends up meeting up with the Fear Master, gets exposed to her toxins. And essentially he ends up fighting a mental battle in his mind where he ends up ends up seeing his dead family. But, and you know, you see him, basically, you see him freaking out a little. He's haunted by these visions. And then, his family then decides to show him, we need to show you these people. These are all the people who have been killed by Fearmaster. You need to do your job and avenge them. Which he ends up going to do. So he does this, and the two cops on his trail, one gets ends up getting killed by the Fear Master. The other one, he shows that the Fear Master was on the payroll and there's a major conspiracy coming up. So this cop actually decides to let him go. And then we find out at the end, they ask, what the hell is Jigsaw? Because they find the symbol of a jigsaw piece. And yeah, so now there's this jigsaw. And that was issue three. Issue four, you know, it asks you who is Jigsaw, but you never really truly find out. They find out that the event that was happening that was about to get flagged by Joe Garrison's wife was a meeting of Simcaria and Begalia, where they're trying to, you know, do a peace process. And Jigsaw, which is actually this criminal organization who just popped up out of nowhere, ends up flooding that summit with Fear Master's gas, causing everybody to attack each other. And one thing which made me really cringe is that Joe didn't want to hurt any of the emissaries, so he had stun chucks.
Stun chucks, I like it. It's a good name.
Stun chucks. And he uses those to incapacitate all the delegates so that way, you know, they can let the toxin get out of their system or allow them to develop a resistance to it, which I guess happens. We find out AAA was who was, you know, his basically his handler, his arms procurement specialist. She was kidnapped, but you know, she's a SHIELD operative. She ended up getting out. We find out that Jigsaw, the organization, has eyes and ears everywhere, and he's actually able, the head of this operation, shouts out a command which manages to completely shut down all of Joe Garrison's SHIELD armaments. And I think they tried to force this where this moment where he's told, where people say, keep calling me a Punisher. He actually says, I tried to resist it, but I am trying to get. Let's see, which one is. It gets reversed. Yeah, he says, I am the Punisher. Sorry, Joe, no, you're not. But he ends up killing the member of Jigsaw who was there because he's not the Jigsaw, he's part of Jigsaw. They consider themselves all, we are Jigsaw. It's like, okay, sounds like they're trying to rip off Robert Kirkman there, but. So he rides off, basically finding all sorts of information that another cop gives him. He decides that as long as people need to be avenged, the Punisher never dies. And I'm like, okay, fine. But yeah, so find out he was declared AAA hacked into the coroner's report, basically saying that Joe Garrison is now dead. So now he gets to exist as a, you know, as a phantom, I guess, till somebody gets his photo. But and you know, they basically say that this is the end or the beginning, and it's like, no. You know, I really tried to like this run. I did because I know other superheroes or like, Ghost Rider. We got to have Johnny Blaze, Dan Ketch, Robbie Rees. They were all the rider, but they were their own rider. I just feel that this Punisher is a little overpowered. He has shield armaments where he's able to literally have a grenade blow up on his chest and he's fine. He's got all this weird technology. I mean, I'm not going to say that the character isn't badass. He is. I mean, obviously, he's you send him to kill somebody, they're going to die. It's just I find it's way too tilted into his favor. And yeah, I just don't see him as the Punisher. Now, could they try to continue and change that? Maybe. But this guy, he has his own mission. His own mission is to be, to try to take down Jigsaw, whereas the other Punisher, he had Jigsaw who, he kept killing, but you know how Marvel's revolving door of death works. So, yeah, this guy has his mission, and his mission is to take out Jigsaw. And once he does that, is he really going to just keep on punishing? I don't know. And from what I understand, this run had an even worse reception than the last one, which was incredibly polarizing to diehard fans and, other fans. And I mean, I'm a diehard fan. I liked it, but this run is just, it's not Frank. The stakes just seem a lot different. So I don't know. I think if they're going to actually do another run with this Punisher, they might need a different writer. Bring back Garth Ennis because Garth Ennis could revitalize it somehow. So yeah, this has been a very disappointing run, as much as I wanted to like it, but I mean he's not Frank.
Then on a positive note, you guys were talking about off air that there's an upcoming Fury related book with Garth Ennis.
Yeah, basically when he was in the Marines, I guess Fury is kidnapped, and I believe that, his kidnappers in, I don't know if it's Vietnam or a different, because I know they did it
Yeah, it's
overseas.
in Vietnam. It's in the early
Yeah.
70s. I think
Okay, yeah.
74 maybe, somewhere
Yeah,
around there.
so they kidnap Fury and they don't know all the information that Fury has. So they want to keep him from, so they send in Frank Castle, who's not even the Punisher yet, to go take out or take out the people who got him and make sure that Fury comes back safe because he's got a lot of info in his head. But Garth Ennis wrote that one, and he also wrote another one called The Platoon, which was a Vietnam story. And that one was recounted by a lot of other people who had served with him. So that was pretty good. Garth Ennis, when you have Punisher in the military or dealing with military, Garth Ennis writes a pretty good story. Of course, I could probably just say about anything he writes practically, so.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll most likely hear about that when that issue comes out. I know you guys were talking about that. So we'll continue to follow the adventures of Frank Castle one way or another. Okay. Jumping over to this book here, there's two titles that I picked for today that are inspired by my drawing show, Cartoonist by Night. An episode that is now released that's out there for everybody is centered on Disney villains. I had my friend Lavi on the show and she selected Disney villains, and that brought me to the comic book shop to take another look at the Disney villain books that Dynamite has been putting out over the last half a year or so. Ones that were I were curious about but I never dove into until right now. So this is Scar number one, a startling new vision starring Disney's greatest villain set within the world of The Lion King. These creators tell a tale of fire and fury centered on an enraged Scar unable to accept that he will never be king. Not so long as Mufasa and his new son inhabit Pride Rock. A plan is starting to formulate with Scar's corrupt mind, which will bring him face to face with the mysterious shaman, Rafiki. This comic is done by Chuck Brown. I'm going to double check that in case there was a autocorrect. Fraley, not Farley. Fraley. Ciara De Francia and Jeff Eckleberry. All right, so I picked up Scar. Issue number one was at the comic book shop. This exists within the world of the animated movie. While we don't dive into Simba's birth, but we are given the information that Simba has been born. Scar knows that now he is not first in line for the throne, and we see him kind of reacting to that. You know, it opens up in a, you know, on Pride Rock and very recognizable art style. We're dealing with a herd of animals that are basically being hunted by Scar in the deep grass, and Scar being the villain that he is. He's not holding back when he goes to attack, trying to basically attack a child of a mother. And the mother is fighting back right away, just, you know, realizing that Scar's preying on her child. And there's a lot of great just action scenes in the beginning. I really dig the artwork. I think it just really fits in line with the movie style and the tone. And knowing that the book is centered on Scar, it does really just kind of give a real kind of great tone of, you know, uncertainty. And, you know, you're on your toes knowing what we know about this character. And so I thought that was a really good setup. But this book takes an interesting turn. I won't get into too many details on this because it's interesting just for the storyline. But and this issue, I think, has been out for a couple months. I think they're on a couple issues in the moment. But Scar is kind of thrown off of a cliff, not so, you know, dissimilar to Mufasa in the movie. But then it kind of enters this interesting world. And if you're watching the video version on Crimson Cowl Comic Club over on YouTube, you're seeing an example of these pages here of just kind of a very trippy looking Pride Rock, like almost some kind of, you know, magical type of land. And we do have a little altercation between Mufasa and Scar. But the whole idea of what's happening in this this weird little, it reminded me of when like Black Panther goes to, you know, that higher realm, whatever, I forget the term of it, but like you just with the coloring and stuff like that, like there's just a lot of really cool stuff happening there. We do eventually kind of, you know, bring it back down for the rest of the story, bring it back down to, you know, our normal plane. We see some vultures that are witnessing Scar and what's going on. So there's some kind of interesting plotting going on from these vultures. As the synopsis mentioned, I'll show off a cool Rafiki intro page there. But yeah, I'm really digging the tone. I don't think there's anything in this issue that, you know, is going to turn the whole, you know, lore upside down. You know, it was a decent enough first issue that I will go ahead and pick up the other ones. But I think it did a good job of just kind of setting up what we need for this story, of kind of almost filling in some gaps of what we've seen in the movie. And, you know, the creators, there's some good interviews and stuff in the back, just kind of talking about inspirations. And, you know, I get the idea that these stories are made so that they can be a puzzle piece that fits right into that story without disrupting anything. So, you know, you could read this series, I'm guessing, and jump into the movie and not have anything, you know, conflict each other, basically. So it sounds like they just need to, you know, have a little, basically a companion piece, deleted scenes, if you will, with all new material. But yeah, I thought it was a pretty strong first issue. Nothing groundbreaking, but enough to go ahead and have me pick up some more. I don't know how many they're doing of this one, but this is Scar number one from Dynamite Comics. And if you don't want to miss out on future issues, you can pre-order, and then you can be prepared, if you will. That's the pun I was trying to find. Be prepared and pre-order these issues. Okay, jump over to Kirby.
I tried to do the thing where I take Lemmy and hold him up and say the same, but he wasn't having nothing to do with it today. So, I got giant size Wolverine, number one. This has a spooky house on the cover with Wolverine walking up to it, whereas on my Under the Color of MS podcast, I talked about Wolverine issue that it had a cool like vampiric castle on it that Wolverine was walking up to, but the story had nothing to do with it. This one fits the image on the front of the comic nicely. We start out, we get two stories in this. We start out with this old farmhouse background going on, and we got a young girl that's running out in the woods to see what happened out in the. There was something that fell from the sky, and she wants to go check it out. And when she does, she comes across Wolverine. Well, she sees her dad go out first and kind of find Wolverine and shoot him. He came down with what looked like a spacecraft from a battle that he was dealing with prior to this. But we later find out the thing he came in kind of looks like a spaceship. And when he's not even near it, it starts whizzing and whirring and making lighten up and doing all these things. Find out later it's basically a kind of a robot type character that ends up growing up, and all the arms and everything grow out of it later on, and it attacks the farmhouse looking for Wolverine. Apparently it's from the fight prior to this, which would have been like, I don't know, I know they talk about Wolverine number 50 in here, so it might be right around that period. But we see in this farmhouse that there's this little girl's taken care of. Well, she drags Wolverine into the barn to try and take care of him because he's pretty much all melted up and blistered and tore up, I'm guessing, from falling from space, going through the atmosphere, burning up and stuff like that. I'm assuming you don't get to see that part of it. You just see that he's already on the ground. So I take that. I just use take the assumption that that's what happened. But you see her with Wolverine. Wolverine's this nasty looking pile here. But then she's got a two-headed goat, a two-headed chicken, a two-headed calf. And she's got all these animals that are growing all double heads. And they have everybody in town's picking on the family, thinks they're a bunch of freaks. Apparently, something must be going on with their property that's causing all these effects. Because the girl, the little girl, she's the only one in the family that's really normal. Something happened where she had no effects from anything, but everything else that's born in their property, it is affected in some way, shape, or form. But then Wolverine notices, like, she's got a black eye, finds out that her, well, assumes that her dad's the one that did it. I'm not sure from the storyline yet whether it was her dad or her mother. Her mother's kind of a very freaky entity, and basically fills the whole basement of the house. And even with every time she gave birth and stuff, the children came out just in weird, very weird flesh form and had different body parts and stuff attached to them. So you get that inbred farmhouse style feel, but I don't know what's all going on with the family's past history. We focus more on the current things that are going on and how the townsfolk can't stand them and how they want to take out the whole family and stuff. Well, we find out that the mom, they thought the mother was killed during birth of this child, but the father took the body and they put her in the basement. And she's just down there growing. And she's got all kinds of tentacles and stuff. Eventually, when all these people come, all of a sudden you see these tentacles come out of all parts of the farmhouse and start attacking the people. And it's just, yeah, it was a very creepy family, but Wolverine does what he can to help the girl out. And then you see some stuff happen and the mother disappeared. There is like a manhole type thing where she kind of went down into like a sewer or something, probably. But we didn't get to see it happen. We just assume that's what happened. So she'll probably pop up again in the future. And Wolverine kind of goes off with the girl and tries to help her and get her away from that atmosphere. But I'm sure she'll have some other things, abilities, or something, since every other character had something happen to him. So there has to be something in her DNA that didn't allow her to get those effects. And then I think we might see something. There might be something that came out in the future that I haven't come across yet. But the second story takes us into the X-Men for the Sabretooth, and I got Rogue, Beast, and all kinds of characters that are in this. And I'm like, when I started reading this, I'm like, well, I feel like felt like I read this already, but it wasn't a storyline I read. I read this story that comes a little bit later that has this Omega Red character in it, and I think that came from the Maverick comics run that I read, because Maverick's in here also, and Omega Red is working with the scientist, these other baddies that are using this machine to absorb the abilities from the mutants. It's basically that style machine that has those big metal cuffs that go around the arms and legs, and they hang them. And then they got all the wires running off them, and they're just sucking their life force. And they found a way to take Wolverine's healing ability and suck it out of them. And they were going to use it on their super soldiers. That was their plan. They also had Beast put up in a machine, Rogue. I can't think of her name, the gal in blue in the beginning that I showed you.
Psylocke, maybe?
Yeah, Psylocke.
Okay.
She starts out with bad guys, but she's got mind manipulation, but then she helps out later on and things. But we end up also jumping back and forth to another set of characters that are on another world that happens to be Planet Mojo, where you got this big fat Mojo character, which I've never seen before. This is the first time I got to see him.
Mojo's
But
great.
yeah, he's doing some pretty interesting manipulations. Like, I'm not a fan of the X-Men comics. I don't like having so many characters piled together that I gotta keep track of. I like the more singleized versions of them. But yeah, in this storyline, I found some characters I definitely want to know more about, especially that Mojo character. But they keep jumping back and forth, and then eventually both timelines end up crossing in one way, shape, or form. But they're also dealing with the hand, and they're jumping into getting in between. Well, the hand is mostly in the Mojo world storyline, but they're also crossing over with the Wolverine and the other characters. Eventually, once Wolverine and them do what they can to get away from the facility, they end up back dealing with the hand and stuff. But yeah, these are two very interesting stories. I really like this story for an X-Men one. It was enjoyable enough, and you get Gambit and all those characters too, which I enjoyed. And yeah, it was a nice little one shot, giant size one shot. And you get a little creepy and you get a little action story. So, but yeah, lots of fun characters that I'm gonna have to check out now. Find some more stuff from. But this is the second time after that Maverick run. I really enjoyed that Maverick run, and I was glad I got to see this story to take me a little deeper into that character. So
Yeah, the one of the more recent Mojo stories, there was a one shot that came out, and I'm pretty sure I covered it on the show back in 2018. It came out, X-Men Black Mojo. It's a one shot, and one of the extra reasons I got excited for it was written by Scott Aukerman from Comedy Bang Bang, podcast and TV show, and Between Two Ferns fame and all that stuff. So if you're looking for some good Mojo, there's X-Men Black Mojo, which is a one shot.
Cool, because they barely touched on the character in here. It's got a couple little teasers. So.
Yeah, I'll have to scrounge up some other good stuff about him, but yeah, he's hilarious. Okay, let's jump over to Katie. What you got for us?
All right, we're starting off with The Mandalorian season one, issues 7 and 8. This corresponds directly with episodes 7 and 8. It's adapted by Rodney Barnes as the writer, Jorge Xanti as the penciler, Dexter Vines and Wayne Foucher as the inkers, Rochelle Rosenberg as the color artist, and VC's Joe Caramagna is the letter. And then a whole bunch of different artists doing the cover depending on which one you picked up. Let's see. So, quick recap, issue 7, Mando and the baby are going back to the planet Navarro, which is kind of like the home base of the characters for this series, because Greef Karga, who him and Mando had a pretty big spat the last time they met, says, "Hey, the Imperials have come and taken over the town, and I need your help to basically get rid of them. And the enemy of my enemy is my friend." So Mando goes back. He picks up Cara Dune, played by Gina Carano, to help him out. And then Mando, Greef Karga, and Cara Dune, well, actually, they pick up Queel in there too. They're going to spring a trap for these Imperials, and they're going to try and get them off the baby's trail once and for all. And they show up to meet the Imperial client, as played by Werner Herzog. And turns out he's not the final bad guy of this. We are introduced to the bad guy of kind of season two, Moff Gideon, played by Giancarlo Esposito. And then in episode 8/ issue 8, we get a big shoot 'em up end of the season where Mando fights the bad guys and saves the town and flies off to try and find a Jedi to train the baby. So I guess pros and cons of these issues. So one pro, the covers are consistently outstanding. And if you enjoy digging through long boxes or have the funds to get them on eBay, there are some gorgeous variant covers throughout this whole series that I've really enjoyed looking for and seeing if I can find them out in the wild. Obviously, if you're a big Mandalorian fan, you'll enjoy this. I will say, unfortunately, it doesn't add any new content. So unlike the Scar comic, we're not getting, behind the scenes or, an extended edition. It's adapting the TV show scene for scene. That could be a pro or a con depending how you look at it. Some cons. Unfortunately, I found the art quality of issues 7 and 8 to be very inconsistent. There were some panels that were fantastic and certain characters that were drawn really, really detailed, and others, if I had been the editor, particularly of issue 7, I would have sent those panels back and said, "You need to redo these." To me, I felt like that was a detractor from the quality, especially because it doesn't match the awesome covers. And the earlier issues of the series were pretty well done. One thing I did notice that might explain this is that the character of Cara Dune consistently is drawn in a way that she's not necessarily recognizable as Gina Carano. Background, Gina is the actress who played Cara, and her and Disney, their working relationship ended on very bad terms. So I'm wondering if they're drawing her in a way that is kind of like, that's mostly Cara Dune, but can't say 100% that's Gina Carano, so that, they don't cause any legal trouble or any more, problems than there's already between those two parties. At the moment, Gina and Elon Musk are suing Disney, so we'll see how that goes. But that was one thing that I could think of where I'm like, okay, maybe there was a reason for this. But there are a lot of panels throughout that are really, really good. So that was just odd to me. And I still really enjoy this story. I love it. It's probably my favorite thing from the new Star Wars that we've gotten from Disney is The Mandalorian. I think if you want to read this just to see how they adapt it, you should get the trade. The trade for season one, there's two volumes. They're both available now, and they have season two forthcoming. I think if you're a casual, that's probably the best way to pick this up. It's a fun adaptation. It doesn't take away anything from the series, And I think Mando fans, this could be a great thing to dip your toes into the Star Wars universe while the show is on hiatus. And the creative team was the same between both books. So that is my review of The Mandalorian issues 7 and 8 from season one.
Yeah, yeah. I'm always curious with some adaptations, because I know some of the other Star Wars for the sequel trilogy, while it was mostly straight up adaptation, there were a couple nuggets of things that were new, if I remember correctly. And so I'm kind of curious what goes into that, if it's just a time sake, or they're just like, hey, let's just pump out straight up adaptations. But I'm always intrigued.
Yeah, for sure. Agreed, agreed. Good point.
Okay, so we'll go back around and kicking it over to Eric again. What you got?
All right. Well, there was a comic book involving kitties, so of course I had to get it. Feral by Image Comics. Same creators who did Stray Dogs, which I know Anthony also liked. I liked it. And so, yeah, this is a different story, whereas Stray Dogs is about dogs. Feral involves, you know, kitties. So starts out where we see a bunch of cats in the back of a van caged. You hear a lot of background chatter between the animal control workers in the front talking about another one. Do we have room? But then an incredibly sickly fox comes out, ends up overturning the animal control van, and you know, everything manages to get out because the cages break open. And we see that this is chapter one, Indoor Cats, where it centers around two kitties, at least from the start. Elsie and Patch. Elsie looks to be like a Siamese cat. Patch, domestic long hair. So they're searching for their friend, Lord, I keep forgetting the name, Lord Fluffy Britches is his name. Because these aren't feral cats, these are indoor cats that managed to get out. And as they're running around, you see they start encountering animals that are very sickly and hyper aggressive. First they encounter a raccoon, but then they're saved from the raccoon by foxes. Problem is, the foxes seem to have the exact same thing that the raccoon did. We found out what happened to the animal control workers, because they're saved by the animal control worker as his corpse falls from a tree onto the foxes. So, you know, it's kind of like, I want to say it's like a Looney Tunes level of antics with little higher stakes. But, you know, comic ends, you get to see Lord Fluffy Britches. That is just too cute. But we see that Patch, she ended up getting scratched by one of the animals. And it looks like she might have it. And it finishes with the dictionary definition of rabies. And mentions at the end, once symptoms appear, the disease is nearly always fatal. So this is a good one. You see the cats, they're somewhat acting like cats running around, and then something comes and they get scared. You see that they tend to act in their own self-interest generally, which if you're a cat person, and I know I am, right, Banzai? If you're a cat person, then you know that they always act in their self-interest. So although I think this could be interesting because, you know, like I mentioned in the background chatter with the animal control, you usually find that they're talking about how this strain is spreading quickly and it manifests quicker. So I think this, like, could build up to a potential zombie apocalypse where, kind of like in 28 Days Later, where you have the rage zombies. So it's a good start. I like this creative team, and as long as they keep putting stuff out, especially involving animals, I'm probably just going to keep getting them. So.
Yeah, I was thinking about that because, like you had mentioned, I was a fan of Stray Dogs as well, and I was glad you brought this one to the club because usually Kirby will mention that I'm talking about these kind of darker animal books, and so I'm glad that you're taking up some of the blame too. So,
Lane.
one thing I want to mention before I'm assuming you're gonna be taking off shortly. So if you are watching the Crimson Cowl Comic Club on YouTube, this is a great plug because brand new merchandise is available for Happy Astronaut, our friends Matt Rogers and Matt Fife over at Keenspot Entertainment with Happy Astronaut, the comic book. Eric is wearing the shirt that says Stay Fresh, Cheese Bags, a line that I believe Happy said in issue number 4. And you can own this shirt and other designs and magnets and mugs and stickers and a tote bag and other things by going to happyastronautcomic.threadless.com. So if you didn't see that image, you're at least hearing that web address through the iTunes version, happyastronautcomic.threadless.com. I have an order that is currently en route as well, so we'll
And I
be
will assure you, it is very stylish.
yes. So yeah, very soon we will be Cheesebag Brothers wearing our shirts. So
Awesome.
cool. Well, it was great to have you. Great to hear the updates on the Punisher, and we look forward to your next appearance.
All right. Catch you guys later.
All right, and also, if you are once again just listening to the audio version, we have a cat count going on. I know Kirby had to step away, but when that happened, we had a second cat come on the screen. So we've had two cats so far on this episode. So feel free to subscribe to us on YouTube. All right, we just talked about cats. It's time to talk about dogs, because I am talking about Cruella de Vil, number one, the beloved Disney villain in her own fabulous series, darling. Even though there's absolutely no hard evidence that noted Cruella de Vil was ever involved in the theft of any Dalmatian puppies, her name has been ruined in all of the tabloids, and now her reputation in the fashion world is hanging by a thread, which is why she's willing to do anything, anything, to restore her good name, even stealing the royal family's priceless jewels. How will that restore her reputation, you ask? You'll just have to pick up this brand new entry into Dynamite's Disney Villains Adventures to find out. This comic is done by Sweeney Boo, Mariana Puglia, Ellie Wright, and Jeff Eckelberry. All right. So, once again, in the spirit of the Disney Villains episode that we did with Lavi over on Cartoonist by Night on YouTube, which, by the way, one of the characters that I drew was Cruella de Vil. So this was another one that I was excited to pick up. Once again, another number one issue. I believe issue 3 just came out at the time of this recording. But yeah, so this is picking up after the events of the original 101 Dalmatians animated movie. It has been some time since I saw the live action one, but I'm going to rewatch everything, including the Emma Stone prequel Cruella movie, because I'm all just hyped up on Dalmatians at this point. So I forget what the live action, if it was a direct adaptation or not, but this is following up after the events of 101 Dalmatians, where we open up on this newspaper article talking about Cruella being exonerated. She is being let go of everything. She was a suspect for all these, the Dalmatian kidnappings, the dog nappings, if you will, the accusations, and blah blah blah. And the story kicks into gear by following, we have kind of a narrator dog with us. And this narrator dog, there's a bunch of dogs that are just kind of standing out some kind of some apartment building, some housing, and there's a house on fire. And this dog is talking to the camera here, talking to the audience, and just mentioning that I just wanted to see if I could find that dialogue here, mentioning that this is Cruella's residence. So that is kind of how the story kicks off, but then we kind of go back a little bit. We are seeing Cruella kind of trying to fix her image. She's going around, she's opening up stores, she has the devil pet shop. She's cutting the ribbon for that. She's basically just doing all this like publicity stunts. Her PR team is working very hard in this issue, trying to mend her image while that she has a bunch of people that are kind of protesting outside, people that are talking about that we believe the dogs. There's a sign that says we believe the dogs, and she's getting chased down by some dogs. We see some good action scenes of these dogs basically just sensing who Cruella is and not letting her go by happy. We see her enter her residence. Once again, this is just kind of, a little flashback from that opening burning apartment there. But the stuff that's happening in this issue here is all about her once again getting her image back on par. But when the dogs, we see a what do they call it in the movie? They say it again here. It's like the dog whistle, the howl. I forget what they call that again. Oh, the twilight bark. That's the term. So the twilight bark happens when the dogs call out throughout the city, and it's kind of waking up a bunch of dogs, basically kind of forming up a team as they kind of head and they want to crash this party. And I'll kind of leave on that splash page here, double splash page of showing these dogs jumping in and ruining Cruella's party. Once again, just kind of getting that revenge and kind of chasing her out of town. So yeah, that is kind of all I'm going to talk about in this one. That kind of sets up the majority of the issue. Much like the Scar one too, they both feel very much in tone of just kind of really setting up that story in the first one, not leaving on any kind of cliffhangers, no pun intended with the Scar book. But there's no big moments of just big shockers, like, oh, I cannot believe they did this. I gotta go pick up issue two. They're kind of very calm entries, I think, into the series. Still good enough that I will check it out. I assume they're all mini series. I'm not sure how many issues these are going. But yeah, this is another one too that when I head back to the comic book shop, I'll pick up the next available issue and see this one through. But after talking and drawing Disney villains on Cartoonist by Night, I've been excited to not only read some of these comics, but also I just want to, fire up Disney Plus and go through some of the old catalog and revisit some of these Disney villains in the original animated movies and live action adaptations and such. So I'm in a very Disney villain mood for the month of April. So even though DC is celebrating April, I'm celebrating Disney villains at the same time. So that is Cruella de Vil, issue number one. Kirby?
I got Grim Reaper, a love story to die for, trade paperback. In death, he finally found something to live for. Lou Collins is caught in a cylindrical curse of violent, gruesome deaths and new beginnings in the bodies of strangers. With no clue why, Lou desperately searches for a way to break the curse and cross over peacefully to the other side. Then, equally doomed, Ella comes along. It's a love story to die for. This is really fun. Our two characters. Basically, when you die, if you get put in limbo, you end up being put back into people's bodies that are going to die one way, shape, or form, mostly horribly, within the next few days or day or week. And they never know what timeline they have to deal with. But all of a sudden, it's lots of decapitation, stuff like that happening here. Lots of gruesome deaths going on. But when you die and go to the limbo realm, there's this long hallway full of mirrors that show basically each one of your personas, which that you were part of before they died, and then you walk down this hallway. Eventually, his characters start attacking him. We never get to see her hallway, but after you get to the end of the hallway, when you're going into the next person's body, this giant head of, it's kind of like a replica of his original face, but this giant head just eats you, eats the character, and then you appear in a new body, and they always throw up from the transfer from the old body to the new body. So a lot of times it's like he'll jump into someone's body and the guy's standing in line at a counter and throws up all over the poor guy that's working at the store or something like that. It was pretty funny how that happens throughout here. And it's like in here, this one, he's gets thrown into a guy that's on a love show type thing where you got the three men and the woman asking the questions, and he appears in his body and just throws up all over the stage. But yeah, they come across, run into each other, and he kind of falls for her, and for our Ella character, she kind of takes advantage of her ability to take over people's bodies. And it's like the next time they get together, they hop in a car and they're just running around. She's speeding, doing all kinds of reckless driving. But you kind of feel bad with that for that, well, second meeting, because they get to meet each other before something happens. Then they got to try and find each other again, and they find each other, and it's his first time not being in a single person's body. He's actually got a wife this time. So you kind of feel bad, because he kind of, you could tell their relationship was iffy, but then he does a real nice thing for her, leaves her on a good note, but then he runs into Ella, and then they hop in a car together, and they get in a car wreck where she gets decapitated. He goes through the window and gets totally mutilated and stuff. So this poor guy's wife is going to find out that her husband was with another woman at the end, and she's going to have no concept why or who she is or what's going on. But yeah, I kind of felt bad for that part. But they keep linking up with each other throughout the story, finding each other every time they die and then come back. They hear his bodies getting sliced in half and stuff. And lots of wonderful imagery throughout this book. Really fun pictures, especially working with the giant heads when it's eating their bodies and stuff. It's like even here, it's like the giant head just starts sucking on his intestines and eventually devours his whole body. It starts from the inside out that time. But yeah, they keep trying to connect and see what can happen, and lots of fun things ensue throughout it. And their love story takes some nice twists and turns, and it kind of works its way towards them finally working their way out of limbo and stuff. But I don't want to give everything away. But if you like a nice, interesting, twisted love story that has to do with people that get crossed over into other people's bodies, and they got to try and figure out who they are, and they do it pretty smart. After like the second meeting, they're like, he's like, well, why don't we both get like a Facebook or a social media account, and I'll put mine under this Lou whatever Costello name or whatever, and she put her underneath a name, and so every time they die, they just have to go on social media and figure out where they were. So that was a nice way to do it, instead of him constantly searching the obituaries, because the first time she finds him, he's sitting on a bench, he's got her name circled because he knows that's the body that she's going to take over, and she's going to die, and there's going to be a funeral in like 2-3 days, and he's hoping he lives long enough to catch her. And all of a sudden she's looking over her soul over his shoulder and sees that he circled that her, so she knew it was him that she was looking for. So, and the next couple times they kind of end up appearing pretty well, pretty much close together, so it wasn't too hard for them to find each other. But yeah, it was fun how this plays out, and they have fun with the deaths and all that. It's like, it doesn't hurt them much more. They've gone through it enough times, so they're used to it. So they play around with things. But yeah, a pretty twisted, fun love story if you're into that type of thing. I'm not sure who did work on this.
Yeah, I was gonna ask that because first of all, Grim Leaper, such an awesome name. It's a great.
Yeah, I didn't recognize these names. That's why. Well, I know Jim Valentino, but that's just the book design, and Mark Lombardi is communications. But everybody else is like Curtis J. Weeb is the writer, Aloiso C. Santos is art, colors, and lettering, and then Sonia Harris and Laura Tabashadi helped out with it. But yeah, it's through Image Comics. I don't know where I picked it up. I'm guessing like a half price books or something, but I might have ordered it online. I don't think it's that new. I think it's an older book, so.
Yeah, if it was in any recent previews, I'm sure that's something I would have bought just because of that name.
Yep.
Yeah. Cool. All right, let's finish up the weekly reviews with Katie. What you got?
Okay, I have Komi Can't Communicate, volumes 21 and 22. It's by Tomohito Oda. The big action in both of these books is the kids go on a class trip to New York City. So that was super fun. I really liked it a lot. I was around their age when I did my trips to New York City, so I definitely had some good memories and identified with this quite a bit. So we see Comey trying to, get her passport settled and all the hoops you have to jump through to get the right paperwork and go to the correct office and pay all your fines and stuff to get your passport. And then she's nervous, excited because she has her first passport. They go to the airport and, they're trying to figure out American style airport security, which was relatable because to me that's like the most stressful part of the airport is TSA agents telling me to take out all my stuff and what goes in the bin and what doesn't, and like, are they going to be like friendly that day? Definitely related to that. So they had the no liquids rule, so Tadano had to throw out his Gatorade. Tadano also had to throw out a reheatable dinner thing, which actually I think they will let you have, so maybe, I don't know. And then Najimi tried to bring spicy cod roe, which was acceptable. Interesting. Anyway, they're all nervous, excited for their first flight. Of course, for Komi, with her social anxiety, this is a really big deal for her. She's never been on a trip like this, this big, never been on a flight at all before. And so we get to actually kind of see this flight through the perspective of the flight attendant who, she's got to take care of like, all these high schoolers in economy class, so they're going to definitely put her to work. But she's trying so hard to, put Comey at ease, and it sort of kind of works. And she's like, how am I going to break through to this kid? But at the end of their flight, they all land safely, and Comey passes her a note that says, "I was really worried about my flight, but you put me at ease." And then the flight attendant was really touched by that. Also, Najimi, there's a little cartoon that says, "Why'd you bring spicy cod roe?" And Najimi's just looking really confused, and I'm like, "Please don't bring spicy cod roe on a plane. I don't want to smell that for like 15 hours." Interestingly, I wanted to look up how much flights are because I'm like, Tokyo to New York is a long flight, and they start at like $1,400 for economy, and then they, just keep going up and up from there. So, either this is a very rich high school or they were saving up for a long time. But, they land in New York. They're going to go on a big bus tour of the city, and they're super excited to try out all things America. We get to see the Statue of Liberty, and the kids are really excited to go shopping. So, they want to go to Shark Shack to get some big American hamburgers. And they want to go to Sephora to get some lavender face masks. I like all the knockoff brand names in here. They're really excited about that. Someone requested a Statue of Liberty lighter. It's not at hand, but I do have my little Statue of Liberty and Empire State Building still from my trip. Not a lighter, just a statue. So poor Comey, is sightseeing in a huge city in, a completely different language. And, I think she actually did pretty well. She was trying to find the Shark Shack, and Japanese and English are very different from each other in terms of like language structure. So she's trying her best to get by with hand gestures and writing things down, and it sort of works, it sort of doesn't. But I like it because it pushed her out of her shell. It gave her a chance to like have some independence and responsibility and, practice all the skills she's been learning. And like, I love New York, but it's overwhelming for anyone. So, she does get a little teary-eyed and has some troubles, but Tadano comes along and helps her out, and I feel like empowers her to do it herself, because he's like, oh, I'll order for you at the Shark Shack. She says, no, I want to do it. So I felt like that was really good for her. We get some more sightseeing. There's a callback to, oh, probably about 10 volumes ago, a friend of the family, of Komi's family, a little girl named Ray, had moved to America with her mom for her mom's job. So we get to visit with Ray and hear about how she's doing on her quest to make 100 friends. She has 60 new friends and Komi only has 40, but we get to meet up with them in Central Park and the girls have a nice day out together. What else? They go to a musical, they go to an art museum. We have some interesting character moments, some very touching character moments in both these volumes, with the kids at Central Park, and then again at, they don't name the cathedral, but it's a really nice cathedral in New York. The name's gonna come to me because I feel like I should know which one it is. But they're admiring the architecture of the city, and they stop in this cathedral to admire the beautiful stained glass windows. And we get some good character development between the characters. There's a scene in the hotel room, and they're putting like four kids in a hotel room, which makes sense because it's not cheap. They'll be fine. They can suffer through it. They're having some girl talk about what happens when you start dating, and they're like, yeah, well, if you start dating, then like you're gonna walk together and like hold hands, and then one of the other girls is like, no, that's not what happens, and then they're like, they're gonna kiss, right? And then they're like, no, it means they're gonna spend time together and like sleep together. And then there's the girl who has OCD with like contact OCD, onemine, and she says, sleep together like in a health class kind of way. And she says, that's so unhygienic. And I'm like, yes, thank you. Yes, it's so unhygienic, but very interesting. I'm not a girly girl, so I'm not very good at girl talk. But to see these kids go have that discussion was a little bit cringy in a good way, but also very funny. And yeah, we stan our asexual queen. That is so unhygienic. And then, the kids get to go back home and they're reflecting on their trip and how exciting it was and what it meant to them. And it was a very successful trip. Everyone came back safe and sound. They brought back all kinds of super fun souvenirs and great memories, and they grew as young adults and people. I really enjoyed it. Definitely, I resonated with it because I went to New York when I was 16, and then again for my 18th birthday, so right around the age that these kids were, and did a lot of the same things. Was super excited to visit Statue of Liberty. I loved Broadway. I still love Broadway. I would love to go back. And just have it be a big moment in your coming of age as an adulthood. And for me, those trips changed my life forever, and I think it probably will for these kids too. So anyway, I really liked it. That's Komi Can't Communicate, volumes 21 and 22. Check it out and see what you think and if it resonates with you. That's my
Were you
review.
thinking of St. Patrick's Cathedral?
Yes,
That big
thank
one?
you. It was. Thank you very much. And it is beautiful. It's
It's
incredibly
awesome
impressive.
looking, but it's just such a weird placement in between all those really
Yes.
big buildings.
I know, right? Yeah, like there's just like office building. Yeah, but it's gorgeous. Really worth it. But thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and it was kind of interesting, kind of talking about how you had taken the trips and like you were at the same age as the characters when they were taking their trips. And it makes me, think back to I went to New York once. I
Nice.
want to say it was probably like 10 or 11,
Okay.
and it wasn't the ideal thing because I was kind of left alone in New York, and then I had to I have my dad's credit card and I used that to check into a fancy hotel.
Kevin!
I was going, I wanted the, I was in a giant toy store with all the toys I could ever imagine, but all I really wanted was just some turtle dove ornaments. I didn't want any of the other cool toys. I just wanted these turtle doves. And then I had these bandits chasing me all over town. I had to check into my aunt's, old apartment.
Yeah.
Yep, so.
And yeah, you ran into Donald Trump. It was crazy, man. Wild. And just the year before, you'd been left home alone and these crooks broke into your house and you had to fight them off. Man,
I didn't think
it's
I told that
crazy.
story, but it appears you know that story very well. So yeah, I must have said that. So, all right. Well, anyways, that is going to do it for the weekly reviews, but we do have another segment. Let's jump over to the news.
And now the news.
Welcome to part one of two of previous previews. We're jumping into the April catalogs for Marvel and DC Comics, talking about books that we are excited for and we recommend. Now, I don't want to just call some shots here, but this could be a potential one-shot club pick. This is Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime, number one. For the first time ever, Marvel and Disney team up to bring you the story of the century. The century is spelled with the cent sign C at the beginning.
Oh.
It's the story you never expected. One of the greatest characters in the history of comics leaps into his most epic adventure yet, in the manner only Marvel can deliver. When Uncle Scrooge's fabled money bin gets stolen by a shocking culprit, the world's toughest duck must undertake a quest unlike any other, alongside a surprising array of allies, other versions of himself. An oversized special from Marvel mainstay writer Jason Aaron and cadre of celebrated Scrooge artists. Also representing the classic Christmas on Bear Mountain, the first appearance of Scrooge McDuck by the legendary Disney Comics creator Carl Barks. Well, I know my friend D. Brad over at Cartoonist by Night will probably pick this up because, yeah, he mentions Carl quite a bit. But yeah, this is interesting. They leave a tease there about a shocking culprit, and there's really beyond the title, there's no, and it's Marvel Comics. There's not a lot of just shouting out, being like, all right, these are what the characters are. There's a couple teases with some of the variant covers, and maybe they're just having fun. But I think they're really trying to keep this secret on if this is a full-on Marvel crossover of some sorts. But if anything, it looks fun for a gimmick. But this is U Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime. I'm gonna check that out. So.
Yeah, if you want to do a club pick with it, I'd buy it. And I recall the Uncle Scrooge's where he had his first penny that he earned, that episode and stuff. That's why I felt it was going to be a lot like that. So I didn't put it on my list, but I'd gladly check out Uncle Scrooge. And I think if D. Brad's going to pick it up, you should see if he'd like to come on and talk about it
Yeah,
with us.
I could probably do
Absolutely.
that because yeah, he loves his cartoon ducks, and this is something that I'll have to send him a message once, and that would be an interesting yep. So I'm gonna take a picture of that so I remember to post it to the club page as well. But yeah, it's a good idea about inviting D. Brad on. So let's just usher it into there for whoever wants to participate in Uncle Scrooge and Infinity Dime. All right, go ahead.
I got Deadpool Role Plays the Marvel Universe trade paperback. Not necessarily a comic, more of a game, but it's done by Colin Bunn. We got Deadpool crashes into the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game with his very own playable adventure. The first comic-sized one-shot adventure for the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game is here. Play as Deadpool and his team, or use your own characters in a fourth wall breaking adventure right out of Marvel's comics. Includes a comic story lead-in by Colin Bunn and a full-fledged standalone RPG adventure and new full character profiles. This is an unprecedented new style for Marvel, combining the fun and interactivity of tabletop RPG modules with the unique and iconic storytelling that has made Marvel a household name around the world. This RPG adventure is intended for use with the Marvel Multiverse role-playing game core rulebook hardcover. So I figure, what the heck, it's Deadpool, and plus you get a little game. Doesn't say it there, but I thought I seen where This one you can actually play alone also if you don't have anybody to play with. So I could be wrong. It might have been something else I seen, but I'm pretty sure that was it. So I was kind of surprised with it being that style of game.
Well,
So.
I remember, I think it was called You Are Deadpool. I think it was a five-issue series I talked about. This is kind of giving me vibes of that, where it was basically like a choose your own adventure with some dice rolling, it was a pretty cool interactive comic book, and it feels like this is kind of in the spirit of that as well. And that was a lot of fun. So just based off of that and just having fun with Deadpool's gimmick and the new movie coming out this summer, feels like that's probably going to be a fun thing to check out. So jump over to Katie, anything from Marvel?
Sure. Well, I am also excited about Uncle Scrooge and the Infinity Dime. I thought that looked really cool. And the Deadpool role-playing game also caught my eye as well. So yes to both of those. And then the only new thing is we're getting an adaptation of the Ahsoka TV series. I love that character. I've cooled down a little bit on the show, but I still really enjoyed it, and I'm definitely excited to see how they adapt it. And more importantly, I am gonna, keep my eye out for some awesome variant covers. I really like the Kenner classic action figure one for this character. I love this character so much. I want to support this character in comics because I think she'd do a great job with original stories. I've been a fan since I was 14 years old of this character. Like, literally, she and I like came like I, the same age, like when we saw the Clone Wars movie that she was. So I'm not a bandwagon fan. I really do like it, and the show to me, I still think it was pretty good. It was mostly like Rebels season 5, so calling it Ahsoka might have been a misnomer, but yeah, I'm excited for it, and I definitely want to give these comics a chance. So the Ahsoka comics, number one.
Cool. This one here, I'm curious about. While I haven't been following the X-Men series, but we are ending the Krakoan Age, the fall of X and all that stuff is happening, and they're just going to be, they have a legacy number, X-Men 35, but legacy number 700. And I had been picking up the issues that Kamala shows up in, and she's not in this giant, promo image here. So I was looking around, and I may still just pick it up anyways, just because I am curious to see where the X-Men go in the future, even though I haven't followed too much beyond the House and Powers. There was a couple crossovers. I think it was the X of Swords or something that started where you needed all the other books, and I had jumped off there, but I've been following Kamala's journey as a mutant. But I am curious because I do not see her in this lineup. But X-Men 35, Legacy number 700, I'll give a shout out for that because this will be kind of leading over into whatever new era of the X-Men that comes this summer. Kirby?
All right, I have nothing else from Marvel, from the catalog at least. I didn't get the catalog yet, so I don't know if I missed out on anything yet, but this is a Marvel related thing, but it's from Andrews McMeel Publishing. They got the Marvel Classics Blacklight 2025 poster calendar coming out, and I want to make a Blacklight area again since I'm coming across a lot of cool Blacklight pops lately. So I figured this calendar, Shelly loves having a calendar every year. I'll get it, and then when she's done with it, I can rip it apart.
Cool. And I forget, did he have anything else, Katie?
No, I think that's it for new things.
Right, I don't have too much left here. I've got one more tab. Oh, yes, so I'm debating on this one here, but it is the Marvel Masterworks edition of Man-Thing Volume 1 hardcover. Now, I'm pretty sure I've read all these comics, mostly probably through Marvel Unlimited when I was subscribed to them and getting excited for the Werewolf by Night show and everything. But this is the a Volume 1 hardcover. Creators of Steve Gerber and Jerry Conway, Roy Thomas, Len Wein, so a lot of great names that are attached to this. Neil Adams is listed in here, John Buscema, Howard Chaykin, Jim Starlin, Gil Kane. There's a lot of great names. This is the, let's see here, collecting Astonishing Tales from 1970, issues 12 and 13, Fear, number 11 through 19, Man-Thing from 1974, Marvel 2-in-1s from 74, Savage Tales, bunch of other things, but there is the variant edition. I do like just the green cover treatment that is shown here on our video version. Very small in there, but yeah, I got a feeling because I don't, any Man-Thing issues I have are just very just kind of random. I don't have as much as I do with Swamp Thing. So I think this will be a good time to jump on and get it in a nice 300-page collection there. So that's Volume 1 of the Marvel Masterworks edition of Man-Thing. So yeah, that will do it for the Marvel catalog. We barely scratched the surface on there, so I always recommend checking out the previous catalogs from your local comic book shop as well as your preferred online retailers. Let's jump over to the DC side of things, kicking it off with Kirby. Anything from DC?
I only have one. I got DC Pride, A Celebration of Rachel Pollack. One shot. Yeah, Rachel Pollack, Joe Carello, Scott Eaton, Michael Allred, and Rye Hickman are all part of this one. In the 1990s, writer Rachel Pollack did the impossible. She raised the bar for surprise and strangeness in her beloved run following Grant Morrison's career-making Doom Patrol. This one-shot reprints the debut of the iconic Coagula, DC's first transgender superhero from Doom Patrol number 70, along with the long unavailable one-shot Vertigo Visions, The Geek, with superstar artist Michael Allred. And in a final original short story, Rachel's most beloved creation, Kate Godwin, aka Coagula, returns to the spotlight in Tale of Triumph Over Death Itself, written by Joe Carello, Rachel's longtime friend and collaborator, and drawn by Rye Hickman. And the main reason I'm getting this is because Michael Allred's the geek. I've only got that little teaser of that character and always wanted tons more, so this is a nice way to get it. But I do like the Coagula character too, so that's an extra bonus having all this together. But yeah, this should be fun.
Yeah, there's a lot of DC Pride related stuff there, and I didn't get the catalog, the physical one, so I was kind of looking online. But yeah, that one's definitely going to be on my list too.
Yeah, I think they got at least three different ones out there.
Katie, anything from DC?
Sure. So I have Batman and Robin and Howard Summer Breakdown. This looks like a all ages comic and looks super cute. And it's written by the creator of the Darth Vader and Son line of books. He has a pretty distinctive cartoon style, and I like it quite a bit. This book is about summer is in session and all the neighborhood patrols, soccer games, and snacks the boys can handle. But things take an unexpected turn when a new group of heroes, known as the Hero Club, approach Damian and Howard with an unusual offer, an invitation to help unmask the corporation planning to build a recycling factory in their favorite park. On the cover, we have 1960s Batman protecting Robin and Howard while some ninjas are dropping in doing martial arts moves, and that just looks super fun and cute and really exciting to me. And I do like that creator's art style in some of the other projects that they've done. So, your turn.
Cool. Sticking on with the DC Pride. DC Pride, so they have the standard issue. They have that tribute issue you mentioned, and then there's also the DC Pride Uncovered number one. And that is what they've done before, where they collect covers from series and stuff. So it's all just visual goodness. And this is DC Pride Uncovered. So I know these are all previously released ones, because I know the Jen Bartel one is one that I own, I'm assuming, from last year's edition. But this is going to collect, I don't know how many years worth of covers, or maybe just last year, but it says DC's most iconic artists put the party in Pride with their fabulous array of variant covers, spotlighting the LGBTQIA plus characters across the DCU year after year. And this art book collects a robust selection of fan favorites, one place for the very first time. So I think it's always worth it for the cover price just to get an awesome gallery of just beautiful art. No story in there, just art. So DC Pride Uncovered, DC Pride Tribute, DC Pride 2024. A lot of good stuff queued up there. And then was that everything for everybody else?
I had one more.
Okay, Katie.
Yep, real quick. It looks like they are relaunching the Elseworlds line, which I've been intrigued by, partially because I just don't follow these characters day to day, but I really like the ideas of some of these stories they're going to put out. We have Batman, Gotham by Gaslight, the Kryptonian Age, and then later on in the year, we are going to get Dark Knights of Steel, DC versus Vampires, Batman the Barbarian, Green Lantern Dark, and Batman Nightfire. So I'm excited to check out a few of those and see how they are. And DC's Elseworlds coming in June 2024. And that's it for me.
All right, and that's it for me as well. So that is going to do it for the catalog. Once again, ask about these catalogs from your local comic book shop, your preferred online retailers, because there's a lot of stuff in there. Anything I'm getting from these companies are mostly just ongoing things, but I've been doing a little more buying off the rack, a lot of things that I missed in the catalog or second-guessed, and then a lot more independent, a lot of Kickstarters, definitely in the last like week or two. There's just been – I was on a Kickstarter dry spell for quite some time, and now it seems like I can't stop myself. I have to remove the app from my phone or something, but a lot of good stuff coming up.
You and me both.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been dropping some of the links into our club group too. Just
I blame Franco; he started it.
I think it was the first one in a while, and then now it's just a lot of cool stuff. And I talked about Nuke Rooster on the club a while back from Jevin Loop. So he has Nuke Rooster issue number 3 that is coming out. There's a bunch of weird cryptid stuff I've been pledging and. It's a lot of cool stuff. I got some Madman figures that are like ready to ship now. So it's a Kickstarter's back in my house at least. Okay. So, but yeah, once again, check out those catalogs from the store, pre-order the books, look through those things because we can't cover it all, but also Kirby on Under the Call of MS, you'll go through and do previews episodes and everything. So if you want a more detailed version of that, definitely subscribe to Under the Call of MS because, he's got a lot of videos over there kind of flipping through the catalogs and doing more service than we do with those segments. So, okay, official plug time, upcoming events. Sunday, May 5th, Madison Mighty Con. Myself and David Gloyd are going to be there. We're going to have some art. We're going to have some new prints. I am prepping. I didn't think that I was going to be doing some new prints. But I'm going to be making some smaller prints. I have my bigger poster prints. I'm adding, I think, one more to that. But I am starting to do some smaller ones as well. And I'm going to test the market with some smaller sizes. But I also just wanted to get some stuff. And then I think David is working on some stuff as well. So to get some prints out there. So we're going to have some new work in there as well as some new art and David's comic book as well for the, Tales from the North, The Dungeon. Just had to check my notes over here. And my notes is the physical comic book. And then if you are local to us, The Gift Nook, these video episodes have an advertisement for The Gift Nook, a cool local shop to us here in Wisconsin. And I have some art on display, so my prints and some original sketches. CrimsonCowl.com for info and original webcomics. Crimson Cowl Comic Club on iTunes for the audio version. Subscribe, rate, and review. Tell a friend. If you want the video experience, if you want to see not one, but two cats show up on this very episode, you can't hear that. You have to go to the YouTube version and hit subscribe and check out Crimson Cowl Comic Club on YouTube. Hit like, write us a comment, share the video, let somebody know about Crimson Cowl today. Kirby has a spin-off podcast called Under the Call of MS. What you got going on over there?
Lots of reviews and previews. And like he mentioned, I am doing previews, separating them, Marvel, DC, and then the big book and IDW whenever they have it, or if anybody else has a catalog. And I focus on like the first issues of stuff coming out or anything that pops up in my head that I've enjoyed in the past or whatever. But yeah, lots of those. And then I started, when you get this, there'll probably be two or three, the first one's out already, of me reading comics. I started out with a little Archie book. Got that broken into two episodes. So check those out, and hopefully lots more fun stuff to come.
Cool. I have some art accounts, Anthony Latch, LAATSCH, over on Instagram and Facebook. I am currently posting, and by the time this video comes out, you'll see all of them. But the Addams Family, I've been posting some Addams Family sketches, which were requested by Shelley, and then she came along and purchased all of them. So she wasn't obligated to do so, but she did, and that made my convention back at Lucky Dogs there. So I've been posting those original sketch cards, doing my little take on the Addams Family. And so, yeah, I do a bunch of different art on there. I also host Cartoonist by Night, a drawing show with Troy Dungera, Matt Fife, Matt Rogers, frequent guest D. Brad Gibson. And then we have one of the most recent episodes is Scoot McMahon for covering Batman the Animated Series. But a brand new episode, which will be a week old when you hear this Crimson episode, is Disney Villains with my friend Lavi. Lavi, we talked about her. She was one of the contributors in Brian Lynch's Hot Wing of Justice Pumpkin, Project Pumpkin. I always reverse the names when I say that. Project Pumpkin was a cool pinup book. Then Lavi was a name that I did not recognize. And once I did, followed her online, met her at Oh Yeah Comics in beautiful downtown Skokie, started up a friendship. We're hanging out, we're talking, and then she was excited to accept the invite. Here's a little preview art of her pumpkin page in that pumpkin pinup book. For the video version, I did put up the QR code if anybody wanted to reach out to Brian and see what copies are left of that stuff there. But Lavi comes out to join us to hang out, talk about Disney villains, draw Disney villains. It's a very fun episode, brand new. It's available, Cartoonist by Night, over on YouTube. We already have our next guest lined up, but I'll wait until it's actually recorded to mention it in case anything falls through. But we are nearing a one-year anniversary of Cartoonist by Night as well. So there's a lot of fun stuff happening at this time of the year. I think that is going to do it for all of the plugs. I got no other reminders sitting here. So, yeah, if you like the show, let a friend know about it, share it, and check out all of the related stuff in the video. We have all those links at the end there to follow us under Crimson Cowl Media. All right, that is going to do it for this episode. This whole time, I've been putting my behind in my past.
I've been jumping in and out of bodies, bub.
And I would like to see the baby.
To be continued.
Spark joy.
You'll shoot your eye out. You'll shoot your eye out.
Yes, Nanny.
I am bullet.
Well, that's not ketchup.
Thank you, Slimer.